In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that?
Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker on the Fan is poured by Pelican Brewing. Experience your hops differently with Hard Hops Blackberry, hop-infused hard seltzers.
All right, Daily Ticker time, brought to you, as always, by our great friends at Pelican Brewing. They crack open today's Daily Ticker with Pelicano. Discover Pelican's summer seasonal cerveza and drink in refreshment. We were trying something today that we've actually been wanting to try a lot, but sometimes it takes a buddy in the industry to be like, hey, can you be our guinea pig in case this doesn't work out? We have Josh Peterson, our friend from Omaha, who is not only on the phone with us for the Daily Ticker, he's also live on the YouTubes this morning. Josh, do you read me? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can't see you. Can you see me? Can you hear me?
We can see you and we can hear you. That's the weird part about doing the video interviews.
I can't see him. I don't put YouTube up on my computer.
I just do it to keep an eye on the old
chat.
On the chat to see if anybody's got a question or a point that people want to bring up on the show. So that's the strange thing is we can't actually see each other. I can look at my computer screen and see you. But wonderful to talk to you nonetheless. He's our good buddy, Josh Peterson, at Josh Tweeterson on Twitter. You can go give him a follow there. Let's get to what you texted us about yesterday, because I find this to be fascinating. So you sent us a text yesterday about this thing that you're doing. Just almost sounds like torturing Nebraska fans who have been just terribly tortured over the last 25 years about what they've suffered since firing Bo Pelini. What are you doing and where did the idea come from?
So I've been putting together a project with my co-host on a, you know, all of us in the industry, right? We have a million side gigs. One of my side gigs is called the I-80 Club. It's on Patreon, so we have paid subscribers over there. And we were doing a post-game show following the USC game last year, which Nebraska lost in typical, normal, heartbreaking fashion, right? And he was like, this has all the hallmarks of all these losses that Nebraska's had over the course of the last decade. So it got this idea of, what if we could rank all 70 losses? Well, at the time it was like 68, but now it's 70. What if we could rank all 70 losses that Nebraska's had over the last decade mathematically? What would actually be the worst? And so I took this project upon me. I started writing the scripts in January. It's called the Groin Kick Chronicles. And today, episode number 5 came out, and it is games ranked 30 to 21. And so, boys, we are getting into the pain cave now. The first game that featured an overtime defeat in the last decade happened today. The Final Four blowout losses happened. So it's all one-score losses for the next few episodes as we wind this project down. It's been pretty wild.
How depressing is it to actually have to talk about these memories?
Dude, it is wild. So I go through my research process has been, I mean, it's just watching highlights, right, and putting together the scripts and what happened. And you know, like, over 10 years, you get a little bit numb to it because it's over 10 years. You're watching 12 games a season, and it's just like, wow, that kind of rolls right into the other. That was pretty weird. How did they lose that game? And then you spend like 5 hours on a Saturday afternoon going and watching highlights and typing up the script, and it's just like, okay, it's actually maybe worse than I kind of realized in the moment, even though I've been watching it the entire time. And I had a couple of subscribers help me put together the formula, because I am not a math guy. I'm not a Google Sheets guy. So these guys were helping build the formula. And every few hours, they're just like, what the hell is this? Like, what are we doing with ourselves right now? So it was definitely a torturous project and a process at that as well.
Yeah, Josh Peterson is our guest, 1620 in Omaha. You can give him a follow on Twitter, at Josh Tweeterson, talking some Big Ten and Nebraska football. It is funny because I think it's a great idea that every fan base can go through. We all have, like, not many fan bases have as like brutal of losses as Nebraska has suffered. Every time they're in, like, an overtime game, I see one of those graphics that pop up, like, Nebraska hasn't scored a point in overtime in 17 years. And you're like, wait, what? Nebraska hasn't won one possession. It's just all these
they
wild.
They start at the 25
like,
and they haven't scored.
What? Like, how is this possible? There's a lot of those. But every fan base, I think, can relate to that. Now, let me ask you this, because we do a segment every Tuesday called The Mail Sack, where we have listeners, you know, send in questions and we answer them sports, non-sports. And one of the questions we got on Tuesday was, who's a team in the Big Ten that you view to be a sleeper? And Sprague looked at me and just laughed, because I do this every year. And I genuinely feel like seven straight years I've been like, you know, I kind of like Nebraska this year. I like the coach. They got a returning quarterback. I like the schedule. You beat Cincinnati in week one. I like their chances. And I again pick Nebraska. Am I falling into the trap, or is this finally the year?
Let me add this real quick before I answer the question. They also have not gotten a first down in overtime since the 2014 win over Iowa.
Like, so how is that possible?
First down. And because of the Illinois game last year, they now have negative yards over the course of their last eight overtime.
That's right. Raiola took like seven sacks, and they were at like the 50-yard line in overtime. I'd never see that before.
There's a screenshot. I think it's like 3rd and 42. It is one of the most hysterical and also depressing things you'll ever see. To answer the question, though, like, I figured that this would be the offseason that I think people kind of come home to that, right? Because it's year two of a starting quarterback in Dylan Raiola, who came into Lincoln with all sorts of expectations. The first five-star quarterback the program has gotten since, I don't know, like Eric Crouch, and that was in the infancy of recruiting rankings. And Dana Holgorsen is the offensive coordinator. Like, I think if you are a believer in them being a dark horse, I would probably start with Holgorsen. Because of what he is able to do, the ability that he has as a play caller, and he's happy to say this, he doesn't have to worry about the other stuff anymore because he is just an offensive coordinator and a play caller. Not to mention, in this era of college football, he's not going to have to recruit like he would have as an OC even 15 years ago. So I think you would start there. You know, the Matt Rhule year three stuff is really, really interesting. I've done a couple of deep dives on it as of late, looking back at what happened with Temple going into year three, what happened with Baylor going into year three. And, you know, the big similarity is returning quarterback, and also that they had lost a lot of one-score games at Temple and at Baylor in years one and two, and then they were able to flip that. The biggest difference, though, guys, is college football, and you know this, college football roster construction in 2025, way different than it was in 2019 even, let alone 2015, when he was at Temple. And so you look at like the returning production, Nebraska way lower today compared to what it was for Temple going into year three when they went 10-4, or Baylor going into year three when they went 11-3. So trying to figure out like kind of that give and take has been, I mean, it's really the question of the entire offseason. I find myself still in kind of the 7-5 range, mainly because I need to see it before I believe it. But I suddenly feel like I'm on an island yet again talking Husker football locally, where one of the more respected columnists in the state, he said 9-3 the other day. And so everyone's like, oh my gosh, are they going to go 9-3? So I'm still in the 7-5 camp, but I mean, I can certainly see it if they're actually able to put things together like we've been hoping for around here for a while.
So we were talking, Josh, about the quarterback tier list that came out on The Athletic, and there's like 10 guys in tier one, and then it goes all the way to tier seven. Raiola is in tier three, and Lagway's in tier one. Can you explain why you think that is, given Raiola started all year and Lagway came in midway point? And then also, is it a weird thing to root for him, given how creepy the whole Mahomes stuff is?
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Great question. I will acquiesce from asking that one. that it's become such a talking point, guys. Like, you know, his entire career at Nebraska, and even in the stuff before that, it's going to be. I think if he doesn't have a breakthrough year, I think that will really become the topic of conversation around here. But I digress. The Lagway stuff, I think, is really, really interesting. And tell me what you guys think about this. I think with Dylan Raiola, it is now because we have seen him play so much that I think they feel that he is what he is, which is wild to say, right? Like, he's only a true sophomore. He's going into his second year. He started all 13 games. He was fine. Lagway, though, is there something about him where, hey, look, he went 6-1. He only played in 7 games, like that, or only started 7 games, rather. He played in 12 of them. Like, does that help people because you don't know what you don't know? I always find this to happen with like recruits or a transfer that comes into Nebraska or any other school where it's like, I've never seen the guy at my school. Sky is the limit for him. But if a player returns and he's been so-so, it's like, yeah, well, he's never going to break through. I think that's what it is. You know, I don't know. I mean, we're, 12 months removed from, you know, everyone wondering if Billy Napier was on the hot seat. Mm-hmm. And so I have found that discussion a little bit curious as well. I wasn't surprised that Raiola was as low as he was. He was 40. I was surprised, though, that he was as low as he was and that Lagway was as high as he was, given, I mean, honestly, a lot of similarities in terms of some of their numbers, though Dylan's, completion percentage much higher than Lagway. So that one was a little perplexing to me.
Yeah, you look at the games at the end of the year, too. I mean, he played against Ole Miss. They beat him. Remember that in that upset? Yeah. He was 10 of 17 for 180 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. So it wasn't like he was lighting the world on fire. And he's a true freshman. I'm not asking you to, but I do find it fascinating. I think your point is spot on about why maybe he's a tier one guy. There's a little more unshaped clay there, if you will, of like, I wonder what this guy could be, whereas we've seen a lot more of Raiola at this point in their career. I am curious to ask you just before we let you go here of, you know, a lot was made of the teams from the West Coast going to the Big Ten, and I know I've done hits with you talking to Oregon and Ohio State last year and all that kind of stuff. I'm just from the Nebraska angle, you guys were the, you know, one of the other new kids on the block, although that was a number of years ago. What has been the perception out there 1 year in of the new West Coast teams and how they fit into the Big Ten?
Well, I'll say this. So I remember last year I was very bullish on the Ducks being able to compete like they did to win the conference. And it was, we have a Wisconsin listener around town. Shout out to Kyle. And he was like, look, this is ridiculous that you're expecting Oregon to come in and compete for and win a conference. I think he picked them to have like 8-4 or 7-5 season. And I said, how much of this is like the bluster of Nebraska from 2011 kind of infiltrating your brain? Because these are much different programs, and sure enough, the Ducks came in, and obviously it was a disappointing end of the season, but perhaps one of the most impressive first seasons in a power league that we have ever seen in the era of conference realignment. So I came away very impressed by the Ducks, which doesn't surprise me. I am ultra interested in the USC situation and what's going to happen with Lincoln Riley. I mean, guys, we are, what, just a few years removed from him being the guy and wondering when's he going to go to the NFL. And, you know, me being a sad sack Dallas Cowboys fan, I was always like, yeah, sign me up for the Lincoln Riley experience. Absolutely not today. UCLA, I mean, the up and down nature of them, they got Nebraska somehow in November as a underdog. That was pretty strange. And then I think Washington maybe is the biggest question mark for me because, what, 2 years removed now from playing for a national championship. I thought that they held up fairly well against a really good Michigan team, at least for the first quarter or so. And so I think that they are a really interesting program. I mean, the travel stuff is maybe the biggest kind of big picture thing that I'm wondering about, because last year, going back to the Trojans, you know, they went all the way to Minnesota and they lost that game. And that, I thought that was like the first time all season where I thought, okay, I think the travel stuff is real, because I think USC should be able to go to Minneapolis and pick up a win versus what I thought was a down Gopher squad. They come to Lincoln this year. I'm interested to see what happens in that matchup. Nebraska goes out to UCLA. I'm interested to see how that goes. So I give it a thumbs up in that it was like fun to see some of the helmet games. I give it a thumbs down in that, you guys know me, I'm a big, I was, RIP, a big Pac-12 guy. I'm sad for Sprague's Beavers. I'm sad for the Cougs.
We're still a conference, dude. At least like, we haven't died. We're still alive. I mean, geez.
Yeah, that's true. You are still alive. Good luck with Boise State.
Can we get him off now? Like, he's been here long enough. This is ridiculous. It's RIP to a conference that exists. What's going on here?
Yeah, I guess that's true. It is still alive, technically. So I'm sad, though. Like, I like the schools being in the league. I'm sad that the conference is not what it once was.
Amen.
It's
amen.
Better. What do you mean? We've cleaned
they
it up.
They got Fresno State now. Dude, they got the riffraff.
We have Colorado
there.
State
they
joining
need to get
us.
Get the auto bids in the weird 4-4-2-2 yeah, playoff right. play. Give those the two. Kick out the ACC.
Great stuff. Josh Peterson, 1620 in Omaha at Josh Tweeterson on Twitter. Go give him a follow. Kind enough to join us on YouTube as well. So our audience got a great look at your beautiful face.
Come to Corvallis. Give those miserable losses.
Come on out to Corvallis for a road trip this year and check out the Chasing 3 Hours podcast as well. Thanks as always, buddy. We're almost there to football season. I'm sure we'll do this again soon. And have fun getting ready for football.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate the time as always.